-40, and counting. They traveled 5 miles before people began running out onto their lawns to watch them pass. Many had cameras, and Richards relaxed.
They were shooting at the air caps at that roadblock, she said quietly.
It was a mistake.
That's what it was. A mistake.
If that maggot was aiming for an air cap when he put out that windshield, there must have been a sight on that pistol 3 feet high.
It was a mistake!
They were entering the residential district of what Richards assumed was Rockland. Summer homes, dirt roads leading down to beachfront cottages, Breeze Inn, private road.
Just me and Patty.
Keep out. Elizabeth's Rest. Trespassers will be shot. Cloud high. 5,000 volts. Set a spell. Guard dogs on patrol. Unhealthy eyes and avid faces peering at them from behind trees like Cheshire cats. The blare of battery-powered freebies came through the shattered windshield. A crazy, weird air of carnival about everything.
These people, Richard said, only want to see someone bleed. The more, the better. It would just as soon it was both of us. Can you believe that?
No.
Then I salute you.
An older man, with silvery barbershop hair, wearing mattress shorts that came down over his knees, ran out to the edge of the road. He was carrying a huge camera with a cobra-like telephoto lens. He began snapping pictures wildly, bending and dipping. His legs were fish-belly white. Richards burst into a sudden bray of laughter that made Amelia jump.
What?
He's still got the lens cover on, Richards said.
He's still got...
But laughter overcame him. Cars crowded the shoulders as they topped a long, slowly rising hill and began to descend toward the clustered town of Rockland itself. Perhaps it had once been a picturesque seacoast fishing village, full of Winslow Homer men and yellow rain slickers who went out in small boats to trap the wily lobster. If so, it was long gone. There was a huge shopping center on either side of the road, a main street strip of honky-tonks, bars, and auto-slot emporiums. There were neat middle-class homes overlooking the main drag from the heights, and a growing slum looking up from the rancid edge of the water. The sea at the horizon was yet unchanged. It glittered blue and ageless, full of dancing points and nets of light in the late afternoon sun. They began the descent, and there were 2 police cars parked across the road. The blue lights flick-flick-flicked jaggedly, crazy and out of sync with each other. Parked at an angle on the left embankment was an armored car with a short, stubby cannon barrel tracking them.
You're done,
she said softly. Almost regretfully.
Do I have to die, too?
Stop 50 yards from the roadblock and do your stuff, Richard said.
He slid down in the seat. A nervous tick stitched his face. She stopped and opened the car door, but did not lean out. The air was dead silent.
A hush falls over the crowd, Richards thought ironically. I'm scared. She said, please, I'm so scared.
They won't shoot you, he said. There are too many people. You can't kill hostages unless no one is watching. Those are the rules of the game.
She looked at him for a moment, and he suddenly wished they could have a cup of coffee together. He would listen carefully to her conversation and stir real cream into his hot drink. Her treat, of course. Then they could discuss the possibilities of social inequity. The way your socks always fall down when you're wearing rubber boots, and the importance of being earnest.
Go on, Mrs. Williams,
he said with soft, tense mockery.
The eyes of the world are upon you.
She leaned out. 6 police cars and another armored van had pulled up 30 feet behind them, blocking their retreat. He thought, now the only way out is straight up to heaven. -39, and counting.
My name is Amelia Williams. Benjamin Richards is holding me hostage. If you don't give us safe conduct, he says he'll kill me.
silence for a moment so complete that Richards could hear the faraway honk of some distant yacht's air horn. Then, asexual blaring amplified,
"We want to talk to Ben Richards."
"No," Richards said swiftly. "He says he won't."
"Come out of the car, madam."
"He'll kill me," she cried wildly. "Don't you listen? Some men almost killed us back there. He says you don't care who you kill. My God, is he right?" A hoarse voice in the crowd yelled, "Let her through!"
"Come out of the car or we'll shoot."
"Let her through! Let her through!" The crowd had taken up the chant like eager fans at a kill ball match.
"Come out!"
The crowd drowned it. From somewhere a rock flew. A police car windshield starred into a matrix of cracks. There was suddenly a rev of motors, and the two cruisers began to pull apart, opening a narrow slot of pavement. The crowd cheered happily, and then fell silent, waiting for the next act.
"All civilians leave the area,"
the bullhorn chanted.
"There may be shooting. All civilians leave the area, or you may be charged with obstruction and unlawful assembly. The penalty for obstruction and unlawful assembly is 10 years in the state penitentiary, or a fine of $10,000 or both. Clear the area! Clear the area!"
"Yeah, so no one will see you shoot the girl," a hysterical voice yelled. "Screw all pigs!" The crowd didn't move. A yellow and black newsymobile had pulled up with a flashy screech. Two men jumped out and began setting up a camera. Two cops rushed over, and there was a short, savage scuffle for possession of the camera. Then one of the cops yanked it free, picked it up by the tripod, and smashed it on the road. One of the newsmen tried to reach the cop that had done it, and was clubbed. A small boy darted out of the crowd and fired a rock at the back of a cop's head. Blood splattered the road as the cop fell over. A half dozen more descended on the boy, bearing him off. Incredibly, small and savage fist fights had begun on the sidelines between the well-dressed town folk and the rattier slum dwellers. A woman in a ripped and faded house dress suddenly descended on a plump matron and began to pull her hair. They fell heavily to the road and began to roll on the macadam, kicking and screaming.
"My God," Amelia said sickly.
"What's happening?" Richards asked. He dared look no higher than the clock on the dashboard.
"Fight? Police hitting people? Someone broke a Newsy's camera."
"Give up, Richards. Come out."
"Drive on," Richards said softly. The air car jerked forward erratically.
"They'll shoot the air caps," she said. "Then wait till you have to come out."
"They won't," Richards said.
"Why?"
"They're too dumb." They didn't. They proceeded slowly past the ranked police cars and the bug-eyed spectators. They'd split themselves into two groups in unconscious segregation. On one side of the road were the middle and upper-class citizens, the ladies who had their hair done at the beauty parlor, the men who wore Aero shirts and loafers, fellows wearing coveralls with company names on the back and their own names stitched in gold thread over the breast pockets, women like Amelia Williams herself, dressed for the market and shops. Their faces were different in all ways, but similar in one. They looked oddly incomplete, like pictures with holes for eyes or a jigsaw puzzle with a minor piece missing. It was a lack of desperation, Richards thought. No wolves howled in these bellies. These minds were not filled with rotted, crazed dreams or mad hopes. These people were on the right side of the road, the side that faced the combination marina and country club they were just passing. On the other side, the left, were the poor people. Red noses with burst veins, flattened, sagging breasts, stringy hair, white socks, cold sores, pimples, the blank and hanging mouths of idiocy. The police were deployed more heavily here, and more were coming all the time. Richards was not surprised at the swiftness and the heaviness of their crunch, despite the suddenness of his appearance. Even here, in Boondocks, USA, the club and the gun were kept near to hand. The dogs were kept hungry in the kennel. The poor
break into summer cottages closed for autumn and winter. The poor crash supermarts and sub-teen gangs. The poor have been known to soap badly spelled obscenities on shop windows. The poor always have itchy assholes, and the sight of Naga hide and chrome and $200 suits and fat bellies have been known to make the mouths of the poor fill with angry spit. And the poor must have their Jack Johnson, their Muhammad Ali, their Clyde Barrow. They stood and watched. Here on the right, folks, we have the summer people, Richards thought, fat and sloppy but heavy with armor. On the left, weighing in at only 130, but a scrappy contender with a mean and rolling eyeball, we have the hungry honkies. Theirs are the politics of starvation. They'd roll Christ himself for a pound of salami. Polarization comes to West Sticksville. Watch out for these two contenders, though. They don't stay in the ring. They have a tendency to fight in the $10 seats. Can we find a goat to hang up for both of them? Slowly, rolling at 30, Ben Richards passed between them. Minus 38, and counting. An hour passed. It was 4 o'clock. Shadows crawled across the road. Richards, slumped down below eye level in his seat, floated in and out of consciousness effortlessly. He had clumsily pulled his shirt out of his pants to look at the new wound. The bullet had dug a deep and ugly canal in his side that had bled a great deal. The blood had clotted, but grudgingly. When he had to move quickly again, the wound would rip open and bleed a great deal more. Didn't matter. They were going to blow him up. In the face of this massive armory, his plan was a joke. He would go ahead with it, fill in the blanks until there was an accident, and the air car was blown into bent bolts and shards of metal. Terrible accident. The trooper's been suspended pending a full investigation. Regret the loss of innocent life. All this, buried in the last newsy of the day, between the stock market report and the Pope's latest pronouncement, but it was only reflex. He'd become increasingly worried about Amelia Williams, whose big mistake had been picking Wednesday morning to do her marketing. "There are tanks out there," she said suddenly. Her voice was light, chatty, hysterical. "Can you imagine it? Can you?" She began to cry. Richards waited. Finally, he said, "What town are we in?"
"Winterport," the signs said. "Oh, I can't. I can't wait for them to do it. I can't."
"Okay," he said. She blinked slowly, giving an infinitesimal shake of her head as if to clear it.
"What?"
"Stop. Get out."
"But they'll kill you."
"Yes. But there won't be any blood. You won't see any blood. They got enough firepower out there to vaporize me in the car, too."
"You're lying. You'll kill me."
The gun had been dangling between his knees. He dropped it on the floor. It clunked harmlessly on the rubber floor mat.
"I want some pot," she said mindlessly. "Oh, God, I want to be high. Why didn't you wait for the next car? Jesus! Jesus!"
Richards began to laugh. He laughed in wheezy, shallow-chested heaves that still hurt his side. He closed his eyes and laughed until tears oozed out from under the lids.
"It's cold in here with that broken windshield," she said irrelevantly. "Turn on the heater."
Her face was a pale blotch in the shadows of late afternoon. Minus 37, and counting.
"We're in Derry," she said.
The streets were black with people. They hung over roof ledges and sat on balconies and verandas from which the summer furniture had been removed. They ate sandwiches and fried chicken from greasy buckets.
"Are there Jetport signs?"
"Yes, I'm following them. They'll just close the gates."
"I'll just threaten to kill you again if they do."
"Are you going to skyjack a plane?"
"I'm going to try."
"You can't."
"I'm sure you're right."
They made a right, then a left. Bullhorns exhorted the crowd monotonously to move back, to disperse.
Is she really your wife?
That woman in the pictures?
Yes. Her name is Sheila. Our baby Kathy is a year and a half old. She had the flu. Maybe she's better now. That's how I got into this.
A helicopter buzzed them, leaving a huge arachnid shadow on the road ahead. A grossly amplified voice exhorted Richards to let the woman go. When it was gone, and they could speak again, she said, "Your wife looks like a little tramp. She could take better care of herself."
"The picture was doctored," Richards said tonelessly.
"They would do that?"
"They would do that."
"The jetport. We're coming up to it."
"Are the gates shut?"
"I can't see. Wait. Open, but blocked. A tank. It's pointing its shooter at us."
"Drive to within 30 feet of it and stop."
The car crawled slowly down the four-lane access road between the parked police cars, between the ceaseless scream and babble of the crowd. A sign loomed over them, "Void Airfield." The woman could see an electrified cyclone fence, which crossed a marshy, worthless sort of field on both sides of the road. Straight ahead was a combination information booth and check-in point on a traffic island. Beyond that was the main gate, blocked by an A-62 tank capable of firing 1/4 megaton shells from its cannon. Farther on, a confusion of roads and parking lots, all tending toward the complex jetline terminals that blocked the runways from view. A huge control tower bulked over everything, like an H.G. Wells Martian, the westering sun glaring off its polarized bank of windows and turning them to fire. Employees and passengers alike had crowded down to the nearest parking lot, where they'd been held back by more police. There was a pulsing, heavy whine in their ears, and Amelia saw a steel-gray Lockheed GA Superbird rising into a flat, powerful climb from one of the runways behind the main buildings.
"Richards!"
She jumped and looked at him frightened. He waved his hand at her nonchalantly. "It's all right, Ma. I'm only dying."
"You're not allowed inside,"
the huge amplified voice admonished him.
"Let the woman go. Step out."
"What now?" she asked. It's a standoff. They'll just wait until..."
"Let's push them a little farther," Richard said. "They'll bluff along a little more. Lean out. Tell them I'm hurt and half crazy. Tell them I want to give up to the airline police."
"You want to do what?"
"The airline police are neither state enforcement nor federal. They've been international ever since the UN Treaty of 1995. There used to be a story that if you gave up to them, you'd get amnesty. Sort of like landing on free parking a monopoly. Full of shit, of course. They turn you over to the hunters, and the hunters drag you out in back of the barn."
She winced.
"But maybe they'll think I believe it, or that I've fooled myself into believing it. Go ahead and tell them."
She leaned out, and Richards tensed. If there was going to be an unfortunate accident, which would remove Amelia from the picture, it would probably happen now. Her head and upper body were clearly and cleanly exposed to 1,000 guns. One squeeze on one trigger, and the entire farce would come to a quick end.
"Ben Richards wants to give up to the airline police," she cried. "He's shot in 2 places.
She threw a terrified glance over her shoulder, and her voice broke. High and clear in the sudden silence the diminishing jet had left.
"He's been out of his mind half the time, and God, I'm so frightened. Please, please, please!"
The cameras were recording it all, sending it on a live feed that would be broadcast all over North America and half the world in a matter of minutes. That was good. That was fine. Richards felt tension stiffen his limbs again, and he knew he was beginning to hope. Silence for a moment. There was a conference going on behind the checkpoint booth.
"Very good," Richard said softly. She looked at him.
"Do you think it's hard to sound frightened? We're not in this together, whatever you think. I only want you to go away."
Richards noticed for the first time how perfect her breasts were beneath the blood-stained black and green blouse.
how perfect, and how precious.
There was a sudden grinding roar, and she screamed aloud.
It's the tank, he said. It's okay.
Just the tank.
It's moving, she said.
They're going to let us in.
Richards, you will proceed to Lot 16. Airline police will be waiting there to take you into custody.
All right, he said thinly. Drive on. When you get a half mile inside the gate, stop.
You're going to get me killed, she said hopelessly. All I need to do is use the bathroom, and you're going to get me killed.
The air car lifted 4 inches and hummed smoothly forward. Richards crouched going through the gate, anticipating a possible ambush, but there was none. The smooth black top curved sedately toward the main buildings. A sign with a pointing arrow informed them that this was the way to lots 16 through 20. Here the police were standing and kneeling behind yellow barricades. Richards knew that at the slightest suspicious move, they would tear the air car apart. Now stop, he said, and she did. The reaction was instantaneous.
Richards, move immediately to Lot 16!
Tell them that I want a bullhorn, Richards said softly to her. They are to leave one in the row 20 yards up. I want to talk to them.
She cried his message, and then they waited. A moment later, a man in a blue uniform trotted out into the road and laid an electric bullhorn down. He stood there for a moment, perhaps savoring the realization that he was being seen by 500 million people, and then withdrew to barricaded anonymity again.
Go ahead, he told her.
They crept up to the bullhorn, and when the driver's side door was even with it, she opened the door and pulled it in. It was red and white. The letters G and A, embossed over a thunderbolt, were on the side.
Okay, he said. How far are we from the main building?
She squinted.
A quarter of a mile, I guess.
How far are we from Lot 16?
Half that?
Good. That's good. Yeah.
He realized he was compulsively biting his lips and tried to make himself stop.
His head hurt. His entire body ached from adrenaline. Keep driving. Go up to the entrance of Lot 16 and then stop.
Then what?
He smiled tightly and unhappily.
That, he said, is going to be the site of Richard's last stand.
Minus 36, and counting. When she stopped the car at the entrance of the parking lot, the reaction was quick and immediate.
Keep moving!
The bullhorn prodded.
The airport police are inside, as specified.
Richard raised his own bullhorn for the first time.
10 minutes, he said. I have to think!
Silence again.
Don't you realize you're pushing them to do it?
She asked him in a strange, controlled voice. He uttered a weird, squeezed giggle that sounded like steam under high pressure escaping from a teapot.
They know I'm getting set to screw them. They don't know how.
You can't, she said. Don't you see that yet?
Maybe I can, he said.
Minus 35, and counting.
Listen, when the games first started, people said they were the world's greatest entertainment because there'd never been anything like them. But nothing's that original. There were the gladiators in Rome who did the same thing. And there's another game, too. Poker. In poker, the highest hand is a royal straight flush in spades. And the toughest kind of poker is 5-card stud. 4 cards up on the table and 1 in the hole. For nickels and dimes, anyone can stand the game. It costs you maybe $0.50 to see the other guy's hole card. But when you push the stakes up, the hole card starts to look bigger and bigger. After a dozen rounds of betting with your life savings and car and house on the line, that hole card stands taller than Mount Everest. The running man is like that. Only I'm not supposed to have any money to bet with. They've got the men, the firepower, and the time.
We're playing with their cards and their chips and their casino. When I'm caught, I'm supposed to fold. But maybe I stack the deck a bit. I call the newsie line in Rockland. The newsies? That's my 10 of spades. They had to give me safe conduct, because everyone was watching. There were no more chances for neat disposal after that first roadblock. It's funny, too, because it's the freebie that gives the network the clout that it has. If you see it on the freebie, it must be true. So if the whole country saw the police murder my hostage, a well-to-do, middle-class female hostage, they would have to believe it. They can't risk it. The system is laboring under too much suspension of belief now. Funny, huh? My people are here. There's been trouble on the road already. If the troopers and the hunters turn all their guns on us, something nasty might happen. A man told me to stay near my own people. He was more right than he knew. One of the reasons they've been handling me with kid gloves on is because my people are here. My people? They're the Jack of Spades. The queen? The lady in the affair? Is you. I'm the king, the black man with the sword. These are my up cards. The media, the possibility of real trouble, you, me. Together, they're nothing. A pair will take them. Without the ace of spades, it's junk. With the ace, it's unbeatable.
He suddenly picked up her handbag, an imitation alligator skin clutch purse with a small silver chain. He stuffed it into his coat pocket, where it bulged prominently.
I haven't got the ace, he said softly. With a little more forethought, I could have had it. But I do have a hole card, one they can't see. So I'm going to run a bluff.
You don't have a chance, she said hollowly. What can you do with my bag? Shoot them with a lipstick?
I think that they've been playing a crooked game so long that they'll fold. I think they're yellow straight through from the back to belly.
Richards, 10 minutes are up.
Richards put the bullhorn to his lips. -34, and counting.
Listen to me carefully.
His voice boomed and rolled across the flat Jetport Acres. Police waited tensely. The crowd shuffled.
I am carrying 12 pounds of Dynacor high-impact plastic explosive in my coat pocket, the variety they call Black Irish. 12 pounds is enough to take out everything and everyone within a third of a mile, and probably enough to explode the Jetport fuel storage tanks. If you don't follow my instructions to the letter, I'll blow you all to hell. A General Atomics imploder ring is set into the explosive. I have it pulled out to half-cock. One jiggle, and you can all put your heads between your legs and kiss your asses goodbye.
There were screams from the crowd, followed by sudden tide-like movement. The police at the barricades suddenly found that they had no one to hold back. Men and women were tearing across roads and fields, streaming out the gates and scaling the cyclone fence around the Jetport. Their faces were blank and avid with panic. The police shuffled uneasily. On no face did Amelia Williams see disbelief.
Richards?
The huge voice boomed.
That's a lie. Come out. I am coming out,
he boomed back.
But before I do, let me give you your marching orders. I want a jet fully fueled and ready to fly with a skeleton crew. This jet will be a Lockheed GA or a Delta Supersonic. The range must be at least 2,000 miles. This will be ready in 90 minutes.
Cameras reeling and cranking away, flashbulbs popping. The press looked uneasy, too. But of course, there was the psychic pressure of those 500 million watchers to be considered. They were real. The job was real. And Richard's 12 pounds of Black Irish might be just a figment of his admirable criminal mentality.
Richards?
A man dressed only in dark slacks and a white shirt, rolled up to the elbows in spite of the fall chill, strolled out from behind a gaggle of unmarked cars, 50 yards beyond Lot 16. He was carrying a bullhorn larger than Richard's. From this distance, Amelia could see only that he was wearing small spectacles. They flashed in the dying sunlight.
I am Evan McCone.
He knew the name, of course. It was supposed to strike fear into his heart. He was not surprised to find that it did strike fear into his heart. Evan McCone was the chief hunter, a direct descendant of J. Edgar Hoover and Heinrich Himmler, he thought, the personification of the steel inside the network's cathode glove. A boogeyman. A name to frighten bad children with. If you don't stop playing with matches, Johnny, I'll let Evan McCone out of your closet. Fleetingly, in the eye of memory, he recalled a dream voice. Are you the man, little brother?
You're lying, Richards. We know it. A man without a GA rating has no way of getting Dinah Core. Let the woman go and come out. We don't want to have to kill her, too.
Amelia made a weak, wretched hissing noise. Richards boomed.
That may go over in Shaker Heights, little man. In the streets, you can buy Dinah Core every 2 blocks if you got cash on the line. And I did. Games Federation money. You have 86 minutes. No deal. McCone? Yes. I'm sending the woman out now. She's seen the Irish.
Amelia was looking at him with stunned horror.
Meanwhile, you better get in gear. 85 minutes. I'm not bluffing, asshole. 1 bullet, and we're all going to the moon.
No, she whispered. Her face was an unbelieving rictus. You can't believe I'm going to lie for you.
If you don't, I'm dead. I'm shot and broken and hardly conscious enough to know what I'm saying, but I know this is the best way, one way or the other. Now listen, Dinah Core is white and solid, slightly greasy to the touch.
No! She clapped her hands over her ears.
It looks like a bar of ivory soap. It's very dense, though. Now I'm going to describe the imploder ring. It looks...
She began to weep.
I can't. Don't you know that? I have my duty as a citizen, my conscience. I have my...
Yeah, and they might find out you lied, he added dryly. Except they won't. Because if you back me, they'll cave in. I'll be off like a big-ass bird.
I can't!
Richard, send the woman out.
The imploder ring is gold, he continued. About 2 inches in diameter. It looks like a key ring with no keys in it. Attached to it is a slim rod like a mechanical pencil with a GA trigger device attached to it. The trigger device looks like the eraser on the pencil. She was rocking back and forth, moaning a little. She had a cheek in either hand and was twisting her flesh as if it were dough.
I told him I'd pulled out to half cock. That means you would be able to see a single small notch just above the surface of the Irish. Got it?
No answer. She wept and moaned and rocked. Sure you do, he said softly. You're a bright girl, aren't you?
I'm not going to lie, she said.
If they ask you anything else, you don't know from Rudy Toot. You didn't see. You were too scared. Except for one thing, I've been holding the ring ever since that first roadblock. You didn't know what it was, but I had it in my hand.
Better kill me now.
Go on, he said. Get out. She stared at him convulsively, her mouth working, her eyes dark holes. The pretty, self-assured woman with the wraparound shades was all gone. Richards wondered if that woman would ever reappear. He did not think so. Not wholly. Go, he said.
Go.
Go.
Oh, God.
She lunged against the door and half sprang, half fell out. She was on her feet instantly and running. Her hair streamed out behind her, and she seemed very beautiful, almost goddess-like, and she ran into the lukewarm starburst of 1 million flashbulbs. Carbines flashed up, ready, and were lowered as the crowd ate her. Richards risked cocking an eyebrow over the driver's side window, but could see nothing. He slouched back down, glanced at his watch, and waited for dissolution. Minus 33, and counting. The red second hand on his watch made two circles. Another two. Another two.
Richards!
He raised the bullhorn to his lips.
79 minutes, McCone!
Play it right up to the end. The only way to play it. Right up to the moment McCone gave the order to fire at will. It would be quick, and it didn't really seem to matter a whole hell of a lot. After a long, grudging, eternal pause.
We need more time. At least 3 hours. There isn't an LGA or a Delta on this field. One will have to be flown in.
She had done it. Oh, amazing grace. The woman had looked into the abyss and then walked out across it. No net, no way back. Amazing. Of course, they didn't believe her. It was their business not to believe anyone about anything. Right now, they would be hustling her to a private room in one of the terminals, half a dozen of McCone's picked interrogators waiting. And when they got her there, the litany would begin. Of course you're upset, Mrs. Williams, but just for the record, would you mind going through this once more? We're puzzled by one small thing here. Are you sure that wasn't the other way around? How do you know? Why? Then what did he say? So the correct move was to buy time. Fob Richards off with one excuse and then another. There's a fueling problem. We need more time. No crew is on the jetport grounds. We need more time. There's a flying saucer over runway 07. We need more time. We haven't broken her yet. Haven't quite gotten her to admit that your high explosive consists of an alligator handbag stuffed with assorted Kleenex and change and cosmetics and credit cards. We need more time. We can't take a chance on killing you yet. We need more time.
Richards! Listen to me,
he megaphoned back.
You have 75 minutes. Then it all goes up.
No reply. Spectators had begun to creep back in spite of Armageddon's shadow. Their eyes were wide and wet and sexual. A number of portable spotlights had been requisitioned and focused on the little car, bathing it in a depthless glow and emphasizing the shattered windshield. Richards tried to imagine the little room where they would be holding her, probing her for the truth, and could not. The press would be excluded, of course. McCone's men would be trying to scare the tits off her, and undoubtedly would be succeeding. But how far would they dare go with a woman who did not belong to the ghetto society of the poor, where people had no faces? Drugs. There were drugs, Richards knew, drugs that McCone could command immediately, drugs that could make a Yaqui Indian babble out his entire life story like a babe in arms, drugs that would make a priest rattle off penitence confessions like a stenographer's recording machine. A little violence? The modified electric move-alongs that had worked so well in the Seattle riots of 2005? Or only the steady battering of their questions? The thoughts served no purpose, but he could not shut them out or turn them off. Beyond the terminals, there was the unmistakable whine of a Lockheed carrier being warmed up. His bird. The sound of it came in rising and falling cycles. When it cut off suddenly, he knew the fueling had begun. 20 minutes, if they were hurrying. Richards did not think they would be hurrying. Well, well, well. Here we are. All the cards on the table but one. McCone? McCone, are you peeking yet? Have you sliced into her mind yet? Shadows lengthened across the field, and everybody waited. -32, and counting. Richards discovered that the old cliché was a lie. Time did not stand still. In some ways, it would have been better if it had. Then there at least would have been an end to hope. Twice the amplified voice informed Richards that he was lying. He told them if it was so, they had better open up. 5 minutes later, a new amplified voice told him that the Lockheed's flaps were frozen and that fueling would have to begin with another plane. Richards told them that was fine, as long as the plane was ready to go by the original deadline. The minutes crept by. 26 left. 25. 22. 20. She hasn't broken yet. My God, maybe 18. 15. The plane's engines again, rising to a strident howl as the ground crews went through fuel system and pre-flight checks. 10 minutes. Then 8.
Richards.
Here.
We've simply got to have more time. The bird's flaps are frozen solid. We're going to irrigate the veins with liquid hydrogen, but we simply have to have time.
You have it. 7 minutes. Then I'm going to proceed to the airfield using the service ramp. I will be driving with one hand on the wheel and one hand on the imploder ring. All gates will be opened. And remember that I'll be getting closer to those fuel tanks all the time.
You don't seem to realize that we...
I'm through talking, fellas. 6 minutes.
The second hand made its orderly, regular turns. 3 minutes left. 2. 1. They would be going for broke in the little room he could not imagine. He tried to call Amelia's image up in his mind and failed. It was already blurring it to other faces. One composite face composed of Stacy and Bradley and Elton and Virginia Paracas and the boy with the dog. All he could remember was that she was soft and pretty in the uninspired way that so many women can be, thanks to Max Factor and Revlon and the plastic surgeons who tuck and tie and smooth out and unbend. Soft. Soft. But hard in some deep place. Where did you go, hard wasp woman? Are you hard enough? Or are you blowing the game right now? He felt something warm running down his chin and discovered that he had bitten his lips through, not once, but several times. He wiped his mouth absently, leaving a teardrop-shaped smear of blood on his sleeve, and dropped the car into gear. It rose obediently, lifters grumbling.
Richards, if you move that car, we'll shoot. The girl talked. We know.
No one fired a shot. In a way, it was almost anticlimactic. Minus 31, and counting. The service ramp described a rising arc around the glassine, futuristic Northern States terminal. The way was lined with police, holding everything from mace, bee, and tear gas to heavy armor-piercing weaponry. Their faces were flat, dull, uniform. Richards drove slowly, sitting up straight now, and they looked at him with vacant, bovine awe. In much the same way, Richards thought, that cows must look at a farmer who had gone mad and lies kicking and sunfishing and screaming on the barn floor. The gate to the service area, caution, employees only, no smoking, unauthorized persons, keep out, had been swung open, and Richards drove sedately through, passing ranks of high-octane tanker trucks and small private planes pulled up on their chocks. Beyond them was a taxiway, wide oil-blackened cement with expansion joints. Here his bird was waiting, a huge white jumbo jet with a dozen turbine engines softly grumbling. Beyond, runways stretched straight and clean into the gathering twilight, seeming to approach a meeting point on the horizon. The bird's roll-up stairway was just being put into place by four men wearing coveralls. To Richards, it looked like the stairs leading to a scaffold, and, as if to complete the image, the executioner stepped neatly out of the shadows that the plane's huge belly threw. Evan McCone. Richards looked at him with the curiosity of a man seeing a celebrity for the first time. No matter how many times you see his picture in the movie 3Ds, you can't believe his reality until he appears in the flesh. And then, the reality takes on a curious tone of hallucination, as if entity had no right to exist separate from image. He was a small man, wearing rimless glasses with a faint suggestion of a potbelly beneath his well-tailored suit. It was rumored that McCone wore elevator shoes, but if so, they were unobtrusive. There was a small silver flag pin in his lapel. All in all, he did not look like a monster at all.
the inheritor of such fearsome alphabet soup bureaus as the FBI and the CIA. Not like a man who had mastered the technique of the black car in the night, the rubber club, the sly question about relatives back home. Not like a man who had mastered the entire spectrum of fear.
Ben Richards.
He used no bullhorn, and without his voice was soft and cultured without being effeminate in the slightest.
Yes.
I have a sworn bill from the Games Federation, an accredited arm of the Network Communications Commission, for your apprehension and execution. Will you honor it?
Does a hand need a flag?
Ah, McCone sounded pleased. The formalities are taken care of. I believe in formalities, don't you? No, of course you don't. You've been a very informal contestant. That's why you're still alive. Did you know you surpassed the standing running man record of 8 days and 5 hours some 2 hours ago? Of course you don't. But you have. Yes, and your escape from the YMCA in Boston. Sterling. I understand the Nielsen rating on the program jumped 12 points.
Wonderful.
Of course we almost had you during that Portland interlude. Bad luck. Paracas swore with his dying breath that you had jumped ship in Auburn. We believed him. He was so obviously a frightened little man.
Obviously, Richards echoed softly.
But this last play has been simply brilliant. I salute you. In a way, I'm almost sorry the game has to end. I suspect I shall never run up against a more inventive opponent.
Too bad, Richards said.
It's over, you know, McCone said. The woman broke. We used sodium pentothal on her. Old, but reliable.
He pulled a small automatic.
Step out, Mr. Richards. I will pay you the ultimate compliment. I'm going to do it right here, where no one can film it. Your death will be one of relative privacy.
Get ready, then. Richards grinned. He opened the door and stepped out. The two men faced each other across the blank service area cement.